Hello, everybody. Welcome back. Another episode of Bootstrap Web with myself, Jordan, and Brian. How the hell are you?
Jordan, doing good, buddy. Back at it.
Back at it. Friday. Yep. Week went by quick, as usual. Hope you had a good one.
It's kind of a short week for me. So today's Friday, but on Tuesday night, we got back from a second snowboarding trip this month, the second of three. I'll be going again snowboarding next week.
Yeah, you're really just on one ski trip with some interruptions for work.
Yeah, every now and then I got to check in for work, but you know, my main focus this month is being on a snowboard on a mountain somewhere.
All right.
It was kind of cool. It was with family, my brother and his wife, and my mom, and my wife and kids. So I've got a little house in Vermont, and we got a second massive snowstorm in the East Coast, and we were right in the thick of it. So there was already about 2 feet of snow on the ground, and then we got like another 2 feet of snow while we were up there.
Okay. We are swimming in some Portland rain these days, day after day. It's cool. It's cool.
Yeah.
All right. Cool, man. Well, look, I got a few things going on, just some general stuff to talk about.
Yeah. What are you working on? What's up?
All right. I got a few things written down here. So I had a very interesting experience in public speaking the other day. You know, I'm part of this this incubator accelerator thing here in Portland. I've talked about that's been great. It's called Starvups. So they had Portland Startup Week, and they asked me to speak at one of the events. And basically, just like, it's almost like a pitch to the community. Like, what are you working on? How can the community help you? It's just like an opportunity to show what you're working on and for other people to see what other people are working on. So it was like a quick 15-minute thing. And I had a very interesting experience I screwed up, basically. And I like speaking in public, and that went well. But I had a strange mixed experience where I finished, and then, you know, people come up to you and they're like, that's awesome what you're working on. This is really cool. You know, how'd you get started? You know, and it's like all this positive feedback. But then I got my mentor in the Starvups thing, he basically came up to me and was like, so just so you know,
your mic wasn't on.
some people were offended by something you said. It's like, okay. Uh-oh. Okay. So it was two things. I didn't realize that it was going to be recorded, and you should assume things like that are going to be recorded and you should act accordingly. And so the content of the presentation would have been different if I had kind of put my game face on. I don't want to go too far into that, but I wouldn't have talked in such specifics. How about that?
What was offensive?
Okay, and the second part is the offensive thing. So when I talk about Shopify as like the hot platform, sometimes what I say is I use the analogy of Shopify is like the hot chick at the bar. Like she gets all the attention. Okay, and you know what? Maybe I say that in conversation, and it's like a little funny and whatever. It's not the most sensitive way to say it, but because I say it very casually, like to friends, then they know I'm not like being sexist. I'm just saying it. When I was on the spot, I also used that because that was in my mind as one of the ways that I put it. And I'm in Portland, super sensitive land. And some people didn't like it. You know, and
I don't think it's that. I mean, look I'm a guy. Maybe it's more offensive than I think, but I don't.
I don't think it's offensive, especially if you read the context and all that.
Yeah, I agree.
But the truth is, what it made me feel like I got a lesson without much pain. Right, I didn't say anything terribly offensive, and I didn't reveal things that were that sensitive. But I kind of got the feeling that I like learned the lesson, but I didn't pay much of a price. So I almost feel lucky, right? Like I had this public speaking thing, and you have to kind of just. I think what it taught me was, yo, if you want to like play the big game, if you hope to one day be on stage in front of thousands of people talking about your business, then like get into the habits now that you want to have then. That's what I mean by learning the lessons without much pain. Like nothing bad happened. It wasn't like I was on CNBC and I said something terrible. Now I have to like hire a PR company and apologize. It's not that.
It's not like you're the president of the United States.
Well,
I think you need to do the opposite. I think anybody who wants to get better at public speaking needs to, especially like early on in that journey, like they need to be less self conscious of what they're saying and how they sound and how they're coming off, you know. And I think those things happen. Like people might be mildly offended by something, but you know, at the end of the day, the best public speakers let their true selves come out and they're vulnerable to the audience and people make that personal connection. And I suck with public speaking. I just don't have enough experience with it. And I get like anyone else, I think I get nervous on stage and all that. But like with podcasting, I think I've become much more comfortable here on the mic than I was very early on. I mean, you could literally go back to like the first 10 episodes of Bootstrapped Web and it's just cringeworthy. Like, and
as it should be, looking back always.
Yeah. You know, just like not really knowing what to say, like awkward silences. And I think all of that is overthinking what I'm about to say in the moment when really like now today, it's like we literally just started this call like 20 seconds before we hit record. We're like, hey, we don't have much time today.
How's your week? Actually, let's just record.
Let's just record. Like, let's just talk on the air. And this is literally right. Us talking.
Yeah. So I hear you. And a lot of times, you know, people in our positions, we look up to the big guys and we see the founder of Airbnb on stage and talking. And you're like, man, you're like a politician. You're like, well, you won't say anything out of the box. But I got a little taste of it and a little taste at a very small scale of why it happens, because it felt like I shot myself in the foot, but it's not my foot. It's like my co-founder's foot is underneath there. My employees' feet are underneath there. My kids, my wife. And so I hear you on the skepticism. I'm like, no, man, be more open. Yes, be more open and more personal and more vulnerable, but don't needlessly handicap yourself.
Yeah, but I think what you said was not a big deal. So
I agree. I agree. But I almost got like a little bit of backlash on like such a low level where I can say, okay, it wasn't a terrible thing to say, but I understand what could happen if you say something worse. It was a mixed experience, and I was very thankful to my mentor there who said something, because he could have just let it slide and I could have just walked away feeling all good about myself and people come up to me and, oh my God, what are you working? You know, I could have just had that experience. And instead, he just kind of burst the bubble just a little bit. And he knew, he was like, yo, just so you know, I don't think it's a big deal, but he basically let me figure out the lesson for myself. Like, you want to be a big time founder, get used to it. When you talk in front of people, you have a magnifying lens on you.
Yes. Yeah, and I don't know that guy. I don't know the group, but that could just be one guy's opinion.
Yeah. It was just one person's opinion. Everyone else. And I asked other women who are in the Starvups, and I was like, yo, were you offended by that? Because if you were, I'm really sorry. And she was like, what? I don't know what you're talking about. That's not offensive at all. So I got a little confirmation that I wasn't being a terrible person. But anyway, so it was a mixed, interesting kind of experience.
Well, so one thing I worked on this week, and I'm actually pretty – so, okay, I don't really have results to show for it yet, but I'm happy with the fact that I got a couple of Facebook ad campaigns up and running and launched. And again, I was traveling, so I only had like 2 days here this week to do this basically from start to finish. But in the past, every time I get into launching – Facebook ad campaigns. Mm-hmm. It's like, oh, just fire up some Facebook ad campaigns. It'll take an hour. And then sure. It's like, oh, wait, but I need a lead magnet. I need the ad creative. I need to write some copy for this. I need to figure out the targeting. I need to figure out the funnel. And I got to track it all. And I got to do all the. And then all of a sudden, like a week goes by and it's not even launched yet. And then you still need another week to test it and get data and all that stuff. So I think I've been through that loop of hell enough times in the past few years of testing Facebook ads and failing miserably and trying it again and failing again, that I think this time around I knew the shortcuts and I knew exactly what I needed to build. And there were still some things that I was trying out for the first time. Like, one of the things I set up was Facebook lead ads for the first time. If you're not familiar with those, it's I think it's a new Facebook feature like within the past year, where you can have an ad, they click the button and they don't leave Facebook. and they stay on Facebook and they put and their email address that's tied to their Facebook account is like pre-filled in the form, and then you, you know, they can opt in that way.
Oh, very nice.
Which is, it's pretty cool, but it's, and it's only been running for like less than 24 hours right now, and already, you know, I think 5 or 6 leads have come through it. So that's a good start, and it's not a terribly high cost per lead.
Worth a try.
It's less than a day, so I'm sure like after full 24 hours, like that cost per lead can definitely go up. But I'm just happy with the fact that like I was able to just bang right through. Like I know that I need these pieces in, and I know that these are the settings that I need to set up, and I'm just going to go with it, throw a budget on it, and press go. So basically I set up 2 different campaigns. The first one, which I worked on Wednesday, from start to finish, I built this on Wednesday, was a retargeting campaign. Okay, so let me step back. By the way, the goal right now for these campaigns is basically to promote the service, our done for you content service. Initially, I was going to run these ads for Audience Ops Calendar, but it's just not ready yet to throw campaigns at it. So I'm going to start with just organically, like the early access list, get those customers in, and then later on do more campaigns for that. But for now, the goal is to just drive more leads through a funnel for the content service and just keep that engine turning. Like we get a baseline organic level of leads, but I really need to just have something that I can say, all right, I know that I throw X dollars a month, it's going to turn out X extra leads, and that keeps the service growing and profitable, and so that I could take that and pump it back into the software. So that's the master plan.
That's good.
So the first, like kind of low hanging fruit, as I see it, is retarget people who visited the service page. And by the way, I hope as I just broadcast this on the podcast, you all don't just go there and start driving up my ad spend. But
you only pay on click, or you pay on impression?
I think for the retargeting campaign, you pay per click.
Yeah, that makes sense.
And what I did there,
the audience ops site, just don't click on the ads.
Yeah, pretty much. By the way, I set that up as a video ad, and I created the video that day too. So,
screen share or your beautiful mug on the screen?
No, it was. I was looking for the easiest, quickest way to create like an engaging video to use as a Facebook ad video, and I tested out a couple different services, but the one that I landed on, ended up using, is Animoto.
Are you
familiar with that one?
Yeah.
Oh, no, this one didn't have stock video footage. I went over to one of the Envato sites. I got like a stock video footage of somebody like typing on a keyboard. So that's like the initial thing. And then an Animoto makes it easy to just add some text and some big headlines. And I think they had some stock music that you could throw behind it. And then what I also like about it is that I could put my voice over really, really easily. I don't have to even like edit this video. Like Animoto is just like, you know, slide number one, put your voiceover, slide number two, voiceover, set the number of seconds, export it. Like I literally created this like 50-second video. Like it took me like less than maybe like an hour to do that, like an hour and a half, something like that.
Nice. That's pretty good. Yeah. Video supposedly performs a lot better.
Yeah. You know, I think it helps. So that's the video ad. And then that basically just says like it goes straight to the service. It's like done for you content service. That's kind of like the big headline. I've got some copy on there. And then it basically links them back to the service page which they've previously visited because they're getting retargeted.
It's a good place to start instead of saying, oh, now I need to go build a landing page and I need to build a thank you page and I need to build a lead magnet. Like you can work that stuff in.
Yeah. Yeah. So the only things I created were the video ad, set up the custom audience and put a budget in and let it go. So that's just retargeting. That's not necessarily driving new traffic to the site. So that was Wednesday. And then Thursday, yesterday, I spent basically the day working on setting up a cold email or cold Facebook campaign. This is where I used the Facebook lead ad. I wanted to have some sort of like free lead magnet content. We're currently working on a new lead magnet on the Audience Ops blog, but that's not going to be ready for a couple of weeks. So I just spent about maybe an hour putting together I wrote like a 5-page guide and it's like a little downloadable ebook. And for this, I used, for the formatting of it, I used a tool called Beacon, beacon.by, so beacon.by. And this is a really, cool little tool. We're starting to use it in the Audience App service too. It does a few things that are kind of cool. You could convert WordPress posts into a nicely formatted downloadable ebook.
Really?
Yeah. So that's kind of cool.
That is cool. What's it called? Beacon?
Yeah. Beacon.by.by.
Beacon, B-E-A-C-O-N?
Yeah. Dot B-Y.
Our new sponsor, by the way.
Yeah, pretty much.
It's spelling out there.
And like I bought the license on an AppSumo thing like over a year ago. And now we're using it in Audience Apps where after a number of weeks, we repurpose our clients' articles into a downloadable ebook with these like this resource hub model that we're doing. But anyway, I used this tool yesterday to create a little like a 5 or 6 page downloadable ebook. I just wrote the content for it right there, kind of talking about like it's called like content action plan or something. And I created a cold ad shown to three different groups, like targeting groups. And the opt-in is to get access to this cold ad or to this downloadable ebook. They enter their email address, their name. They get it. That automatically integrates with Drip. So Drip has a nice integration between Facebook lead ads and Drip. You don't have to do any fancy like Zapier or anything. It just
very nice.
Directly from that Facebook lead ad form into Drip. So that's set up. And then I have a workflow in Drip that basically gives them the downloadable ebook and then drops them into, and then there's like one more sales email 3 days later that's about trying to drive a lead for the service. And then it drops them into our content emails that they get every week.
Nice. I'm curious to see how that works. I don't know, as we're thinking more about marketing, I don't know which way to go on lead magnets and that sort of thing. Cause I'm like, I don't know what works these days.
I mean, I think I'm probably going to change that a number of times in the next few months, but like, I just wanted to get something launched
by the end of
yesterday.
And right. You can swap out the lead magnet at any point in the future.
Yeah. Yeah.
Cool, man. I like it. I hate Facebook tracking right now. Facebook ads right now are the enemy of Carthook.
Why is that?
The Facebook pixel tracking is the one thing that has just eluded us. It is so complicated and there's no one to talk to. There's a million different approaches. There's no one at Facebook to talk to. Everyone we talk to wants something different. And then we start to look around.
You mean your customers want it integrated?
Our customers are just like, but it's not giving me this information. And we don't know.
But isn't it like...
Is it theirs?
But Facebook pixel is just one pixel now.
Not... Yes, but our use case is just relatively unique because we have to trigger purchase events not only on the checkout page, but also on the upsell. Right. So we have this relatively unique flow of, sure, you add to cart and then you go to the checkout.
So like when you do an upsell, you don't go to a unique page URL.
Right. Because the page URL is dependent on the funnel URL and all this. So it's just really complicated. And then once you get into it, you find yourself like underwater. Like, where am I? What am I supposed to be doing again? Where did I start? How did I end up here? So we looked around at like some similar type products that have the same types of issues, and we found a common theme. You go to lead pages, you know, plenty of resources, plenty of development power. You go to their like tracking, and it's just a field for scripts, and underneath it says, we do not support this, period. Like, you can add whatever tracking you want, but we do not support it.
That's what we did in our WordPress plugins. Yep. We have a landing pages WordPress plugin and content upgrades. Field to throw whatever scripts you want on the page. And
it's your problem.
Yeah.
Right. And then I looked at ClickFunnels, who, you know, everyone using ClickFunnels uses paid advertising. That's a generalization, but it's not far off. And same thing, just a field and a docs article on how to do it, which is basically go to Facebook, copy, and then paste. And if you want custom events, add them in yourself. And then again, we do not support this. Do not ask our support about this. And so it's like, oh, that's why they ended up there, because it's a nightmare. We've been working on it for 2 weeks and we're working.
But that's really the best way to do it, because they might be using Facebook, they might be using Mixpanel, they might be using AdRoll. Like there are all these different tracking services that they might need different pixels for.
We thought because of our unique situation where we have to trigger multiple events and multiple purchases from the same person, all this other stuff, we thought, you know what we're going to do? We're gonna make it super easy for people. All we're going to do is ask for the pixel ID and we will populate everything and trigger all events. And people were like, oh my God, that's amazing. Thank you so much. And then once we started getting into it with people who do some heavier paid traffic, and we started working with some well-known like optimization shops, and then they're like, we need it perfect. so we're in the weeds on that. Yep. But we'll get there.
Could be a custom service add-on.
Custom service add-on. That's right. It's like that's our higher tier.
Yeah.
All right. Let's see what else I got. This might be a little bit on the personal side, but last night I was such an adult, man. My wife and I, we went to the local elementary school to see where our daughter's set to go to kindergarten next year. So
you guys right are better now, parents than us.
What do you mean? You got to go. Orientation, whatever else.
Okay. So she's enrolled and it's orientation.
Right now she's in pre-K and we have this really, we got super lucky. There's a school here that is inside of the Children's Museum of Portland. It is a fantasy pre-K. It is literally in the museum. It is the coolest place for a kid ever. So we got lucky. We got into the lottery and she got in there. But now it's time for kindergarten. So it's where we both come from public schools and our default is send them to public school. And then you go and you're like, oh man, it was a little jarring. Public school is its own thing, man. It's this monster system that sucks out all individuality and personality. And like,
I worry about that too.
Yeah. Like the principal, these people were good, nice people and they knew what they were doing, but you could just see and feel the system has just sucked out all creativity. It's so rigid.
I'm thinking about this too. And my daughter's only turning three like next week, but and actually she didn't make it through the lottery to get our public preschool. So we have to find a different preschool for her to go to. But then the next step, when she gets to kindergarten, we specifically moved to this town, Orange, Connecticut, because it's one of the highest rated school districts in Connecticut.
Right. We talked a lot about the schools in Connecticut last night.
How
good they are.
But you know, you guys are better parents than us because we just basically trusted the internet. We were like, all right, the internet is telling us it's a good school district. I guess we'll move there. We didn't we could have gone and checked out the schools a little bit and talked to people. We didn't do any of that.
It's also when they're three, it doesn't feel as pressing.
No, but we bought a house here. We're going to be here through the, you know, to raise them. I think about that too. And also I'm just wondering like, all right, so we got a good school district rating. What does that even really mean?
Right. Is that test scores and where they go to college? That's not quite the same thing. The thing that we found jarring was these kids are going to be five. They're little kids. And people were asking like, so is there like recess? Like, yeah, there's 20 minutes for lunch and a 20-minute recess. I'm like, so you're going to have these five-year-olds sitting in a desk for 5 hours a day? Like, what about music class? Like, yeah, once a week. I'm like, guys, they're five. Like you know, they're going to, they've talked about like hand grip of the pencil that they're going to work on. I'm like, really, guys? They're going to figure out how to read and write. Like I didn't expect the transition from like this, like super hippie child led school that we're in right now to public school to be that jarring. I thought kindergarten would be a transitionary thing and it feels like first grade. It feels like, you know, reading and really try to plan your vacations around school because if they miss a week, they're really going to fall behind. I'm like, really, guys? They're fucking 5 years old.
And I don't really know what school is like these days. I'm sure it's so different from when we went to school.
No, dude, it's the exact same.
Well, that's even scarier.
Nothing has changed. Nothing. The only thing that's changed.
Well, that's how it felt when we were kids. It felt like the schools haven't changed in 30 years before us, you know?
Yeah, exactly. The only thing that's changed is that the testing and the system is even stronger. It is even like they're talking about tests in second grade that they're preparing for in kindergarten. You know, and then as an entrepreneur, I look around and I'm like, so I don't like this option. What other options do I have? Right? Because every day what you do is, what option would I like to take? I don't like this option. I want to figure out a different option. And then you look around and you're like, so I'm just going to have to pay up. Is that what I'm going to do? Am I still send my kid to private? Is that what I want? I don't want to do that. But the options are not – you don't have that many options.
My and I don't really have any data to go on this yet, but just my personal experience going through school when I was a kid, my worry is that they're not going to teach them problem-solving skills. It's – in general, it's learning the book, preparing for the test, taking the test, and getting a passing grade. And it's not so much take this engine, take it apart, put it back together. There's this problem. You need to figure out a couple different solutions and be creative. And there needs to be some of that somehow, somewhere. And my wife and I have talked about this, just to try to do as much extracurricular stuff, and not just like pack the kid's schedule with fucking soccer practice and all this different crap, but like just try to do other things in addition to school, whether it's projects, traveling, you know, building stuff, whatever it is.
Yeah. Yeah. That was heavy. What else, man?
I have a feeling that being entrepreneurs, raising kids and going through that whole process, it's like heading into a world of frustration.
Yeah, I totally agree. Like, I feel like I'm going to lose my mind, and I cannot imagine when there's something like actually negative, like, oh, there's a problem, kid, and they're picking on your child. I'm like, I'm gonna kill someone. Right? I don't know how I'm gonna be able to just play along.
I know.
You know. All right, well, that's it. All right. So I know, look, we don't have a lot of time today because I messed up. I got a demo scheduled in 15 minutes, my friend. I got 4 demos today and 2 podcasts. How about that for just talking all day? Just talk all day.
Yeah. That's another thing on my to-do list. I want to do more getting on podcasts, do a little podcast tour and get that kind of ramping up over the next month or 2-3 months as I'm getting ready to really roll out Audience Ops calendar. Another thing that I started working on just briefly was Quora question answering yesterday, and I found a couple of relevant questions that I could write a good answer to. I might try to make a habit of that, but there aren't, like, you can find a couple of really good ones with a lot of activity, but then after that, you know, it's not like a regular thing that you could just keep finding more opportunities.
Right. Only what's his name? Jason Lemkin? I don't know. He has like 10,000 posts on Quora.
Yeah, I don't know.
It's like if you're going to go all in on it. Otherwise, I think it's just good, some SEO juice.
But, you know, on the SaaS, like, we're getting pretty close at this point. Like, a lot of the key features are in or almost in. And we started building like the performance tracking where you can track traffic and conversions. WordPress, like two-way WordPress syncing is now built. So if you have posts in WordPress and you've got posts organized in your calendar, you change the date in the calendar, it changes in WordPress. You change the date in WordPress, it changes in the calendar. So that's basically working. We're rolling that out today. I've been having a couple more calls with beta customers and getting a lot of really good feedback. And I'm starting to notice some trends and some feature requests that are, that's pretty much clarifying where we need to set the priorities. So that's really good. And my goal is still sometime in March to start inviting more customers from the early access list to sign up and start like official free trials and then get into paid. We need to build that trial system and the developer's working on that right now. So that's coming along.
Yeah. I owe you an email response on the credit card thing.
I forgot about that.
Yep. Me too.
So what I'm trying to figure out actually is, I know Rob and Mike did an episode about this recently, but like I need to be emailing those early access people. And try to kind of warm them up again. Like, I think I've done a pretty good job of like not spending forever on development. So it's only been, I think, less than 6 months since we broke ground on code, and we're getting pretty close. And then, you know, a lot of the people who signed up, you know, some have signed up as recently as this week or last week. So, basically what happens is when they sign up for early access, they put in their email, the next thing they see is the survey. They fill out that survey. I get that as an email and I respond to every single one personally.
Okay.
And a lot of times I'll respond to specific things that they said or questions. And, right.
Well,
and
that's a good way to start things off.
Yeah. And so I always get into at least like a one or two back and forth mm-hmm. with every person. But then after that, it's like, okay, so we're going to roll it out in a couple more weeks. I'll keep you posted.
Right.
And then it's just like kind of, it's been basically radio silence. I think they might get some of our content emails, but they're nothing about the app.
Yeah.
So what I'm trying to figure out now is like, I know I want to create a couple of videos that highlight some of the key features and the problems that we solve. And I might start to roll those out as I create them. But yeah, I'm trying to figure out like how to warm them up. And then I have an idea of how I'm going to prioritize and figure out like the best people to invite first.
I hear you. It's like we're having a Twitter conversation the other day about raising prices. What did we come up with? The ratio of no, it's right, but still don't do it.
right.
It's that's kind of our lives. Huh?
I know. Ben Orenstein at Big Snow Attending Conf is like, I think he was kind of serious about this. Like, I want to start some sort of service where I basically hold your hand while we raise your prices together. Like,
we'll do a screen share, few of us together, like ready on three.
Yep.
That's good. I like that.
Like raise your prices as a service.
Being in touch, I got a few hundred people on that list and I have been so bad at it. And just send an email with a screenshot of the new feature and be like, this is going to be great coming up soon. I'll be in touch. Like that every 3 weeks would be so much better than nothing. It would probably take about 30 minutes to do.
Yeah.
But you still don't do it.
It's okay, just that we're like so in the weeds of developing these features or working with the developers, designing them, that it's like, yeah. I know,
but what's the point in spending all your time developing if you're not going to have a receptive audience? So it's like we already know this, but it's still hard to do. It's rare when you see it done well. Yesterday, I got an email from someone I have seriously no idea what this business even does. And they were like, we're almost ready for you. And I was like, Jesus, that's me, man.
Yeah. I've been on like some were like SaaS that I actually signed up and tried like 2 years ago. Haven't heard from them since. And now it's like, hey, we just released a new version.
So also known as we just hired someone to finally do this.
Yeah.
So here's my thinking on it. I think I'm going to hire a junior marketer. That's my new thing right now. We're pulling back on spending money on outbound because we have enough inbound coming in that we just don't need any more right now anyway. So I think I'm going to take that part of the budget. And I think I'm gonna hire a junior marketer. And
what would they do?
Actually, okay. So they would do those things that I know I should be doing but don't do. That's literally my goal. Because I have a Trello list of things that would be beneficial to the company. Like our recovery app, that thing is so ignored. And it's growing nicely. And we have become the default recovery app for subscription businesses. We own that market and we just get sign up after sign up after sign up. We say, hey, I heard about you in our Facebook group. And we just have so much buzz going there. And yet, I mean, I cannot tell you, we have maybe a dozen potential case studies of people crushing it, adding $1,000, $2,000, $5,000 in recurring revenue every month to their subscription box just from abandoned carts. And how hard would it be for a marketer, a junior person, 25 years old that wants to get into marketing, to just spend 3 hours creating a 3-page case study and that's it. And I look at that and I'm like, never going to happen.
Right.
Never.
Yeah. There's a lot of little things you can give them, you know?
Yeah. So that's my new thing. And I want to do it here in Portland locally because I need the kick in the ass. That is not the Slack. Hey, we said we were going to do this. No, I need the hey, I'm here today. And we said we're going to work on this today. So let me know when you're ready to work on it.
Yeah.
And right next to me and I'm paying them and I'm paying their rent. And that's like, I feel like that's the only thing that's going to work for me.
Yeah. It could be good to have someone like that, like really spend every single week, like engaging in I guess you kind of do this too, but like engaging in communities, Facebook groups, Quora.
Yeah. And, you know, and I need help on the customer support. And that's the best way to learn the product.
Yeah.
Because people are like, I'm having this weird problem. And you have to figure out what's connected to that problem.
Yeah.
So I think I'm going to do it. If anyone listening to this knows someone in Portland that might be the right fit, I think I'm going
to
do it.
So you want to work with them in person?
I do. I do. I think that's the best way to have like that knowledge transfer. For, you know, if a customer support ticket comes in and they ping me on Slack, like, hey, how should I get back to this? Then it's annoying.
Right.
But if it's in person, then I can just say it out loud and then they learn. And then just the osmosis, I just think that is, yeah, we're like super remote and everyone's all over the world, but our tech team is all together in Slovenia. And I want someone in person. So it's like this little bit of a hybrid. I don't think, I personally don't have the discipline to do the purely remote thing for everything.
Yeah, I've always been purely remote just because I don't know why. I mean, part of it is the market. Like, there's not a lot of people with the specific skills that I need right around locally here.
Yeah, but I think you'd be surprised. I know I'm surprised. I had lunch with Keith Perhack yesterday. We had a nice poke bowl. And he told me he's hired 4 people in Portland.
Yeah, but you're in Portland. I'm in suburban Connecticut.
I still wouldn't assume, but yes, yeah. It's easier to metro.
Part of it for me though is also that like I love the flexibility of setting my own schedule, working wherever I want, and I've always felt like
like a normal person, and I'm a stoner slacker.
I don't know. I mean, like, but I used to have a office that I rented in Norwalk.
Yeah, I remember.
And like three, four days a week, I would just not go there. I would just either work from home or work from the coffee shop, or, you know, if I had an employee coming in on a regular schedule, I would feel obligated to come in on those days too.
Yeah. I think I need that. I need to feel obligation.
Yeah.
All right, homie. I got to go triple S, baby.
All right, man.
All day, all day.
There you go.
Great catching up with you, my man.
All right. Have a good one.
See you, everybody.
See you.